Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rapoport.
And today, Sonia, we travel to the ancient year of 2014 to rewatch...
I thought you were going to say 1973.
Well, we'll go there as well. We're going to watch X-Men Days of Future Past, the Rogue Cut. That wasn't part of our plan.
No.
To watch the Rogue Cut. It's just the one we have in our media collection for whatever reason.
Right.
And we didn't feel like downloading or trying to find to stream the other edition.
Yeah.
So the Rogue Cut it is. For those not familiar, although you probably are, the Rogue Cut is the extended cut version of this movie that has more scenes featuring Rogue as a primary character.
Yeah.
Played by Anna Paquin, reprising her role from the first three X-Men movies. And that'll be the theme of this movie, is that there's a lot of reprisals of roles once thought lost to the rebooting gods.
Right.
So we just watched this movie. Sonia, tell me your history with this film and then your subsequent experience rewatching it just now.
I only saw it once in theaters, I'm pretty sure, and it was not the Rogue Cut.
That's right.
It was the theater release version. I liked it. I didn't feel the need to watch it again until now, but I liked it again.
You liked it again?
Yeah.
I liked it too.
There's issues, you know. It's just that time travel stories always have issues, and not all of the issues are related to time travel, but I'm willing to overlook inconsistencies when it comes to time travel because it's just like, it's not the point, you know? Like,
I think the time travel is pretty clean in this movie.
Yeah, okay.
There's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense related to the overall continuity of the X-Men cinematic universe.
I know, but I am willing to lump a lot of that in with time travel issues.
Right, and I think that was the primary theme of all the producers and the director, Bryan Singer, returning to the franchise here, was that time travel allows us to smooth over a lot of plot holes, narrative inconsistencies, what have you.
Yeah.
For the sake of trying to bring order to this jumbled cinematic venture they've had going up to this point.
Yeah, I don't know if it successfully irons out the wrinkles, so to speak, but I am willing to suspend disbelief in a lot of ways just because it like hurts too much to try to really think it through and reconcile everything.
Yeah, we're going to subject ourselves and you, the listening audience, to quite a bit of pain here in trying to do just that.
Okay.
Because what else would we be talking about?
The fabulous costumes, duh.
Right. You want to start in the costumes?
Okay.
They didn't really strike out to me as anything that interesting.
Yeah, no. The only one that is kind of weird is Rogue's outfit. She has like a silver costume with like a diagonal side zipper thing.
It's pretty good.
Her costume. Pretty good.
I liked Anna Paquin's Rogue outfit.
Yeah.
I also like Magneto's costume. The Michael Fassbender version.
Uh-huh.
Towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He's got like a cool half cape thing going on.
Uh-huh.
Which I liked, and he's got these weird arrows across his collar.
Yep.
That
muted maroon colors.
Still not as good as the costume he had at the end of X-Men First Class, when I guess we last saw him, when it was like really shiny purple with a nice shiny purple helmet.
Right. I guess mostly the costumes are just 70s, like, period costumes.
Well, for the 70s characters.
Yeah.
But for the post-apocalyptic X-Men, it's like pretty much what they had in the X-Men movies, but I'd say just a little bit sleeker and more body armor type.
Future garb.
I feel like influenced by...
It's the future.
Right. I feel like influenced by The Dark Knight a little bit with Batman's costume and that. Just a little sleeker black body armor.
Somewhat related to costumes, but not quite. We've talked about Professor X's chair.
Yeah, that was a big sticking point for me. I made a point of that in the last episode.
Yeah, the future Professor X, like, they tried to give him the floating chair,
right,
but they updated it, so it's not, like, a solid gold
It's an open face floating chair.
Yeah, it's not as good. They should have just given him the gold.
Right, I need a big gold box. With a plush, you know, velvety back for him.
Right.
But, you know, that kind of bothers me. I hope we see that in the Disney Marvel X-Men cinematic universe when they get to it.
We'll see.
But here, this movie, it's a pretty satisfying fan service movie all around. It was a way to reprise the characters and the director from the first two X-Men movies that we knew and loved that were somewhat spoiled in, well, not somewhat, clearly spoiled in X-Men 3, The Last Stand, where they killed off Professor X and Cyclops and Jean Grey, and they had the Phoenix Saga, which was really unsatisfying, and it was just a really crappy movie, and it's like trying to like bring some dignity back to those first two movies. And combine it with the new characters that we all liked in X-Men First Class, with Fassbender and McAvoy as Magneto and Professor X, respectively, and even Nicholas Holt as Beast and Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique. They all get a chance to shine in this movie, and I think the result is pretty good. It's a bit of a clusterfuck of a movie, because like too much is happening. And in the road cut, it's just like way too long and like needlessly overcomplicated with the way they. It was like it made sense for them to cut out all the rogue scenes, but still, as a tribute to the X-Men universe and the X-Men comics, it was actually very good. I would say it touched on a lot of classic X-Men themes and plot points and little Easter eggs that were very satisfying, and the fact that they did try to reconcile all the mistakes they made in the movie universe. It was like a nice thank you to the fans, I thought, that were sticking by it. I mean, Wolverine Origins did make good box office despite it being terrible. Same thing with X-Men The Last Stand. Like, fans were still going out giving their money to this series. At some point, it seemed that Fox was trying to kill as a movie franchise. They never believed in it from the beginning. And they're like, well, we like the Wolverine aspect. Let's put it all into Wolverine. But, you know, people love the X-Men.
Which they continued to do here. You know, like, they make up a reason that it has to be Wolverine going back in time.
Which goes against the comics, where it was Kitty Pryde that goes back in
time. That would have been a more interesting movie. I would have liked to see that. But you know, they haven't developed Kitty Pryde as a character, so there's no buy-in.
Right. They didn't. I mean, Ellen Page was in X-Men 3 as Kitty Pryde, but she wasn't.
Yeah.
And they also needed to go back to the 70s, which Kitty Pryde would not have been born in. Right. So it makes sense that it was Wolverine. I think it's clever enough. That's a change I could live with.
Yeah.
It's a way to get Hugh Jackman to star in the movie in a satisfying way. I mean, he has to be the star in this cast of characters. You can't like make it Halle Berry or something. What else was I going to say about this? So it's like a pretty satisfying mishmash of stuff.
I think also because we watched all the previous movies so recently, it kind of helps you keep all those things in your mind more.
Right. I thought I read a lot of IMDb trivia before watching this movie, or during as we were watching.
Yeah.
And some fun like little notes. Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen were very surprised that they were asked to reprise their roles, and they're very happy to do it. They thought they were done forever and that they were written out of the universe. And they just were like personally touched that they were asked to come back, and so that's like kind of nice to read that, you know, they felt renewed relevancy in coming back. And some other like weird stuff I read in IMDb, things that didn't make the cut were like appearances by Gambit and Psylocke. I don't know what iterations of comic characters they would have been, but like there's like a whole bunch of stuff, like ideas were in this movie. And they kind of had to pare it down, which I think is pretty good to start as a starting point. Like, throw it all in there and then cut out what's, like, excess fat. Talking about the comics, it is one of the most famous comic lines ever. Like, weirdly, if you read the comics, Days of Future Past from, I think it was, like, published in 1980 or something. It's, like, only, like, one or, I forget if it's one issue or two issues. I think it's just two issues long. It's not, like, it wasn't, like, this 10-issue event.
Yeah.
It was just really memorable, like, two-issue narrative by Chris Claremont.
Right.
Who has a cameo in this movie.
Well, that's the thing with most of these stories, is that a lot of the X-Men stories can kind of stand on their own.
Right.
You don't need, you know.
That's the fabulousness of the Chris Claremont run, is that so many of his just one-off issues, like, can be turned into major media events.
Yeah.
I've talked about it previously in the podcast. There's an issue that Claremont does, like right after the Dark Phoenix saga ends, the X-Men travel to hell to rescue Nightcrawler, who's killed by some mysterious forces or something. And it's like an awesome comic on its own. The X-Men in hell battling demons, going through the seven rings of Dante's Inferno. Like, that's just one example. And they've never done that in a media.
It's probably too religious in theme. I don't know if that would make it to like a mainstream movie.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Like, I'm not saying it'd be a movie, but like when you read the comic, it's cinematic.
Yeah.
It's epic. There's countless issues that you could probably like throw up to that.
Yeah, well, that's why I always get so mad when they just reboot like any superhero over and over again with an origin story.
Right. Yeah,
because every one of these like major hero characters has like a million great stories that.
Yeah, I've said it many times. If you've ever read the Grant Morrison run on Batman,
yeah,
that he did in like the mid to late 2000s and early 2010s, whatever it was, those issues are like the narrative storytelling he does there are almost beyond anything I've seen in science fiction, in modern cutting edge science fiction in any medium to this day.
Mm.
The stuff he's doing in Batman, you know, psychologically, technologically, character wise, it's insane. Like a lot of comic books are like that. To the like, a lot of modern comics are really amazing.
Yep.
In the storytelling stuff they're pushing forward. So, you're right. It's kind of like a bummer when, and Marvel's guilty of it too. But when Marvel and DC in these movies, they go back to like their really classic stories just because people sort of know them.
Mm-hmm.
Like The Dark Knight Returns is a classic example.
Yeah.
They use that heavily in Batman vs Superman, which is dumb. It's like there's so many
there's
stories
no reason
to tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could just make up something, too. So here, Days of Future Past, it's a well-known X-Men comic, mainly featured Kitty Pryde going back to the past, traveling from the year, I guess, 1980 to 2013. That's in the comic. So in here, they bump it up by 10 years, and they subtract it by 7 years. So it takes place between the years of 1973 and 2023.
Mm-hmm. Which is not that far away at this point.
Right, yeah. Still, like, oddly far away. Like, I can't believe we don't live in the 2020s yet.
We will soon enough.
I know, and that's gonna, I feel like it's no turn. I feel like 2020 is gonna be a real turning point year, at least in our lives, from our perspective of our ages.
Yeah.
You know, us being born in the, you know, mid-80s, like.
There's just so much of that in sci-fi. It's like any sci-fi movie coming out of the 80s, the future, like, the far future is, like, the year 2000. Did
right.
they not realize that that movie would still be available for viewing in 15 or 20 years?
What movie?
Or they didn't care.
Didn't we just watch something that said the future was in 2000? Oh, we were playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time last night,
yeah.
Me and you, on our SNES Classic, and our hacked SNES Classic, because you can't get that Ninja Turtles game on the store-bought version. And one of the levels was, like, they go to the future, and the year is 2020.
Right.
And they're riding on, like, flying hoverboards into, like, a neon futurescape.
Uh-huh.
I think it was the level's called Neon Knight Riders.
Yeah.
But anyway, as we were playing, I was like, well, still not the future yet, you know.
Next year.
Yeah, right.
Just wait for.
Well, next year's 2020 when we're recording this. I mean, 2019 when we're recording
this
podcast. Yeah. Right. We're almost at 2019. So yeah, the far off year of 2023 implications, I think, for the Logan movie that we've yet to review, which takes place in 2029. You know, it's kind of bizarre because Logan looks pretty good in this movie in the year 2023. He looks pretty strong and he just has some gray in his hair. But by the time you see him 6 years later in 2029, he looks a little more haggard and run down.
He had a tough 6 years.
Right. The healing factor really did a number on him. It really started to abandon him in 6 years. So that's kind of a shame for him. Anyway, so this movie, you know, it opens in the post-apocalyptic future, which is pretty true to the comics version and the cartoon version we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Where New York City is a, like, perpetual, like, shithole, bombed out, destroyed. Sentinels rule the Earth. It's not made clear what the humans' role is in all this. They mention that humans who help the mutants are also in these concentration camps, which we see.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, are there other humans living in a safer part of the Earth that the Sentinels are protecting? We don't really know or see. It seems like the Earth is not worth living in at all. Supposedly, I read in IMDb trivia, I missed the cameos, but Sabretooth is among the mutants marching to his death. Also, I guess Evan Peters as Quicksilver is marching to his death, too, in a camp. It seems, like, surprising that he would ever get caught as a mutant,
yeah,
you know, based
does.
On his ultra powers that'll be exhibited in this movie. So there's some cameos going on as we see, like, a grim, like, future Holocaust, which is, like, a throwback to the first X-Men movie when we open on the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, a lot of, like, good, clever allusions to things going on in this movie, to other movies, to the comics, to the cartoon even. So we see like a future band of X-Men. It's Kitty Pryde as Shadowcat, Sunspot, Warpath, Blink, Bishop, and Colossus. They're all like a band, like out and about doing X-Men-y things in this horrible future. What they're exactly doing, I don't really know. But they establish this pattern where they're attacked by Sentinels. In this case, they're in Moscow, I guess. And they're attacked by Sentinels. They've been discovered, and they fight them. And Kitty Pryde, as they're fighting them, they all start to die. But Kitty Pryde has a new power, which allows her to phase people's minds into the past. So she can phase a person's mind like 2 weeks into the past. And in this case, she does it with Bishop. And when they do that, then they know Bishop can warn someone in the past to move because they're about to be attacked by Sentinels. So that's like the premise of the world they're under. They get to like rotate time back 2 weeks perpetually to try to keep surviving. I don't know like what the end goal is there, because like weirdly they established that they, it just dawns on them the idea that they could use Kitty Pryde's power to send someone else in the back into way into the past to fix the present. Or the future in this case.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like an undetermined, like, what the fuck's going on with all the X-Men? Like, why they split into two teams? It almost seems like when the Kitty Pryde team meets the Professor X team, which consists of Professor X, Magneto, Storm, and Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I'm missing anybody. I don't think so. They're kind of, like, surprised that Kitty even has this power and, like, what they've been up to.
Yeah.
Like, that's just, like, unexplained in a weird way.
Yeah.
I mean, it is what it is.
They all have their various mutant exploits that they're doing.
Right. And it's like these, I guess Professor X still has the Blackbird somehow, which is functioning and allows him to travel around the Earth super fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's just all like kind of unexplained nonsense that they just gloss over.
But they do show the younger team of mutants fighting the Sentinels.
Right.
And I don't like this incarnation of Sentinels.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's like clever in a way because they've harnessed genetics from Mystique so that, you know, they have, like, changing powers, and also from Rogue, I guess.
Which we learn in the Rogue cut. I don't think that was a plot element in the original version.
What?
That, what you're saying, how they've harnessed power from Rogue?
Well, they don't, like, go into it explicitly.
Right. It's implied.
But it's implied because you see the Sentinels, like, interacting with various mutants and then being able to use the powers of those mutants.
Right. There's a, like, in the Rogue cut, Rogue is kept alive by the Sentinels in the X-Mansion, which is a Trask base, and it's implied that they're using her power somehow with the Sentinels. So, right, I agree. I don't like these Sentinels at all.
I actually think, like, the changing thing is clever, and, like, them being able to absorb other people's powers is clever, because, like, it does make them a really formidable enemy.
Right.
But the way that they're rendered,
the CGI is crappy.
Yeah, and I don't,
the design doesn't look that interesting. I don't like the design. They
I
look
don't
like
the way their faces open up to shoot lasers. Yeah. Just let their eyes shoot the lasers like the Sentinel does.
Right. I would have preferred them to be talking like in the cartoon.
Yeah, like with robot voices. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it should have been.
And I don't like how their arms transform into like a thick metal spike to like stab people with. I wish they would just shoot lasers like they're supposed to, and like use their fists.
I don't like. I also don't like that they're not that big. I don't like the size of them. They're kind of like twice the size of a normal human.
Yeah,
they're like
they should
two and
be
a half.
Bigger, right?
Yeah, I would have liked, at least in the future versions, they should have been like the size of Godzilla.
Yeah.
Like, I know that's ridiculous. We've talked about it in the show many times. Like, especially you have giant robot movies. It's like, who cares about seeing a giant robot? But at least in this like fantastical future version, that might have made more sense that the Sentinels got to gargantuan size. So then maybe you don't have to have quite so much of the element of the this is what I would have done. I would have had like the main Sentinels are like the big robot ones we saw from the X-Men cartoon, and the X-Men are more than capable of like beating them up and trashing them. And how about, hey, here's an idea: a future Wolverine with his adamantium claws, which makes no sense because we saw at the end of the Wolverine he loses them.
Yeah,
but he's got them back. Okay, cool. No one cares. How about a scene of him fighting them? You know.
Yeah.
But. And then it's like they fight them, but then you have one special Sentinel, like the ones we see in the movie,
right,
that has got all the mutant shape-shifting ability,
right,
and is unstoppable, much like Nimrod was in the X-Men cartoon,
yeah,
who they can't defeat, and they're so terrified of him.
Yeah, that's
like,
pretty cool.
There's a great moment in the X-Men Days of Future Past Part 2 episode in the cartoons where Nimrod travels back to the fast, and the younger Wolverine's like, you're afraid of that Sentinel? He's like a small, like, wimpy tin can. And you see the terror in Bishop's eyes over Nimrod. He's like, it's Nimrod!
Yeah.
That acting performance always gets to me. Like he's so terrified of him. And I think the older Wolverine in that is also scared of Nimrod, too. Like, he just can't be beaten. The way, like, his they slash him open and his circuitry just reassembles itself.
Yeah,
and
like that would have been cooler, I think.
Yeah, like Wolverine cuts his head off and you see the wires like reaching back for its body and stuff. Like how about so one Ultra Sentinel and then all the big clunky Sentinels, you know, that are kind of like maybe they're a little older and rusted and stuff. And so that's how I would have done that.
I know. I don't like the look of them. I don't like that they look like metal and then in the script they have to explain the fact that they're in fact not metal, but they're like some polymer.
Well, they're magnetoproof.
Exactly. They have to explain it, though. Just make it look like they're not metal, if that's what you want. And
right. Well, we see them. Anyway. Yeah, I mean, we see more traditional Sentinels in the 70s version.
Yeah, those are better.
They are better. They're better. Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to say I wish they were bigger, because that goes against what I just said previously. But whatever, that's fine. So they cook up the scheme. They say, we can't send someone's mind back to the past, because it'll break their mind. Except Wolverine, who could, you know, his brain will heal. Physically, I guess, from being transported to the past. So Wolverine, instead of Kitty Pryde, is sent back to the past. And like we said, I think it makes sense for this movie in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then they explain a bunch of MacGuffins that I think are dumb, but I guess necessary. Professor X, Patrick Stewart, warns Wolverine, I'm not going to have my powers in the past.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, I won't tell you why now. I'll let James McAvoy let you know. And then he's like, you also have to team me up with Magneto, Michael Fassbender. Ian McKellen tells that to Wolverine. He's like, you're going to need me too for this mission. Which turns out makes no fucking sense, at least in my reading of the movie.
Uh-huh.
Like, I wonder if they just left Magneto in the prison, if that would have been fine. I don't get like why they needed Magneto at all. Maybe you can explain that to me later as we get to it.
Okay.
But it just seems like he's ultra dangerous and proves to be, like, make things way worse.
Yeah.
But like, it's weird when Ian McKellen says that to Wolverine, Hugh Jackman looks at Patrick Stewart and Patrick Stewart, like, nods solemnly. It's like, yeah, he's right. You're going to need to get him, too.
Yeah, because, well, whatever. We'll get there.
Okay. So, Wolverine wakes up in the past in 1973. I saw an IMDb trivia. Sonya's a little sick, so she's going to get up and walk around to cough a little bit. I like in the IMDb trivia, I read that Bryan Singer supposedly had a 2-hour conversation with James Cameron about how to make the time travel work in this movie and make sense.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that, I don't know like how much is to believe from IMDb trivia. Anyone can really post stuff there. But I like to believe that's true. Because James Cameron is like a big fan of Marvel, and he always wanted to make a Spider-Man movie, and he based a lot of Terminator ideas off Marvel comic books, I believe.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the Sentinels are, there's a lot of copacetic things going on between Sentinels and Terminator anyway.
Wait, who's the time travel expert in this scenario? Bryan Singer?
No, James Cameron is.
James Cameron is?
Right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, he's made a lot of time travel movies.
Yeah.
Terminator is like the most famous time travel.
I don't know. I would have been impressed if he like sat down and had a two-hour conversation with like Stephen Hawking.
Okay, yeah. Well, he's not going to get Stephen Hawking to
James Cameron.
I mean,
whatever.
Well, we saw that silly like Sci-Fi had a or some channel had a James Cameron TV show recently where he talked about all his favorite sci-fi concepts. Remember we watched that? And time travel is like a big topic. So I think actually the time travel makes sense. So I mean they don't really I guess they explain it in the movie, but online it made more sense to me. They say that the reason you would think that the second like Wolverine's even introduced into the past,
mm-hmm.
that the future would be fixed on some level. But you see in the movie it's running parallel to the future. But even though Wolverine goes about changing a bunch of stuff, butterflying effect the hell out of the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's killing people right away in the past.
Right. The bone claws again.
The bone claws are back. But, like, the future is not affected. And Brian, it's explained that Wolverine's consciousness is linked in parallel with the future in the past.
Right.
And that it's only once the stream is broken, when Kitty Pryde's power stream is broken, that the future is changed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And because they can't let go of the stream, because if they let go, and let's say in the middle of the movie, let's say Wolverine is lost, it could have disastrous effects on the future in a way that none of the characters are going to be in that room.
But in the Rogue cut, that does happen.
It's sort of, like, briefly. Like, they gain control of him. It's a bunch of, you know, nonsense. Like, oh, we've lost him for a second. We could regain control of Wolverine.
Oh, jeez, I'm really sorry.
That's okay. fans at home, we're going to have to make do with Sonya's sad coughing here. So, to me, the time travel, it works enough. It makes more sense than I thought it did. So Wolverine's in the past. It's 1973. It's right around the time of the Paris Peace Accords when the Vietnam War was ending. That's the overall premise. Hugh Jackman, again, looks great in this movie. He's so ridiculously muscular. Like, if you watch YouTube videos of him getting in shape for these movies, I think they talk a lot about how in the scenes where they have to show him, like, nude and bare-chested, I think on those days during his workouts, he, like, doesn't drink any water. Like,
why is that a thing?
I don't know. I think dehydrating yourself when you're that cut, like, really sharpens the way your muscles appear.
So bad for you.
Right, yeah. I'm sure it was not pleasant for him. But, you know, timelessly, his body was captured, you know, in cinema. So I'm sure he's proud of that. So he looks great. He's got the bone claws. I think, like, to be fair to the bone claws, they look better than they do in any other movie.
To be fair to the bone claws.
I don't know. They look kind of cool in this movie. Except at the end, which we'll get into. Bolivar Trask is retconned again. In X-Men 3, he was played by a different actor. The guy from Predator. I think his last name is Duke. I can't quite remember his first name. But, you know, he was played by an African-American man. In this movie, he's played by Peter Dinklage, who is a totally different human being altogether.
Yeah, but, like, he's great in this part.
Yeah, he's really good, yeah.
It is weird that they change the character so drastically.
It is, but Peter Dinklage is amazing. Yeah. He's excellent in this movie. This movie has great acting top to bottom, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So basically Wolverine has to track down Professor X first. We see what Trask is up to. He's trying to sell his Sentinel program to Congress. In the Congress scene, it's like a black room, you know, secret room, secret congressional black book meeting. Supposedly in the congressional staff includes Chris Claremont and Len Wein, who's the creator of Wolverine. Mm-hmm. I didn't notice them in the cameos. I read that in the IMDb trivia. Meanwhile, Mystique is on her own mission. She's solo now. She's broken up with Magneto. We'll figure out why later. She's in Vietnam trying to free some mutants who are about to be captured by Major Stryker. I guess he's not promoted to colonel yet. Played by a younger actor. So she frees, I believe, Toad, another character named Ink. I don't really know much about him. And Havoc are the main noticeable ones. Mm-hmm. Havoc from the last movie. Now a Vietnam vet, I guess.
Right.
10 years, we have to mention that 10 years have passed between this one and the last one, and the characters have not aged a day.
Mm-hmm.
So Alex Summers still looks like he's 21 years old. So we'll just have to live with that with the future movies going forward as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Mystique frees them. She's like this freelance, like borderline evil mutant, I guess, but she's fighting for mutant liberation around the world the best she can. She turns into a soldier named Colonel Sanders, which I thought was really stupid.
Uh-huh.
Not a joke that worked for me.
Is that a thing with Mystique, that she speaks all these foreign languages?
I think it is.
Yeah,
I think
just because she's been alive so long and it's part of her, like, blending technique?
I think it's probably has more to do with her power somehow. I could be totally wrong there. Maybe she studied other languages, but here, right, she speaks Vietnamese. She speaks French.
French,
right, yeah. So I think it probably has more to do with her shape-shifting than anything.
Mm.
So Mystique's, like, you know, out and about in Vietnam. I mean, this movie, I think, is, like, it had a $200 million production budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shows. I think the sets, the costumes, the special effects, it was nominated for an Academy Award for special effects, which is kind of interesting.
Hmm.
It all looks good. It looks
like the
money's on the screen. It's not, like, it's one of the more lavish X-Men productions we've seen.
Yeah.
Because they're usually trying to cheap out in these movies. Here it looks pretty good. It looks better than X-Men First Class, I think, anyway.
Right.
So, meanwhile, Wolverine drives to the X-Mansion. It's dilapidated. All the ivy is overgrown. The estate. Beast lives there with Professor X. Beast has figured out some kind of formula that allows him to turn back into a human. He actually seems to have the ability to transform between Beast and his human self at will, which I think... I mean, I get it that Beast is a genius scientist. He might have figured out a chemical that allows him to do this.
Mm-hmm.
but I still find it hard to believe that he can control it at will.
Well, he describes it almost like the Hulk sort of thing, where like when he gets too like emotional or something, then he can't control it. He turns into the beast.
But... Yeah, and then he also says, "I just take enough to control it the way I want to control it."
Yeah.
But Professor X, he explains, takes too much of it so that he's permanently not a mutant. He doesn't have his powers.
But it also enables him to walk again,
which
doesn't make sense.
Professor X says it affects. His DNA allows him to walk. Like, I don't. It doesn't make. He got shot in the spine. Does the drug heal his spinal chips?
I don't know.
Right, and like, and cause like, nerve stems to grow into his legs. Who knows? So Professor X doesn't have his powers. He looks like the way they film it. I think is ridiculous because they show him as like a heroin addict. Right. Essentially, that's the parallel, which they kind of try to explain too by saying he says that because I use his power, I can't hear the world's pain, so I'm able to rest easy, you know, at nights. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's the heroin relief he gets. But still, it's like a ridiculous parallel. They show him like tie off his arm and shoot a needle, you know. And
yeah, it's weird.
He's like he looks
unnecessary.
He looks like he doesn't shower with his long hippie hair and beard and mustache. I'm not into it. I just don't get why he's not bald at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why do they insist on giving James McAvoy hair in these first three movies, really? He only gets bald at the end of X-Men Apocalypse.
Right.
It's like, why is him finally going bald such a plot element? He should just be bald. I mean, he's a bald man. It's not really... I don't think it's really supposed to be connected to his powers. And he's also walking around. Like, he's supposed to be... That's part of the... charm of his, I mean, not charm, but it's part of the story of his character that he's got that disability of being paralyzed.
Yeah.
And he's powerful yet confined to a wheelchair. It's like an FDR parallel, you know. Uh-huh. It's like it's supposed to be something good. It's essential part of the character. So I just don't like that they insist on James McAvoy being fully mobile in this movie, in the first two X-Men reboot movies.
Mm.
In the Apocalypse, he's in the wheelchair, but whatever. So Wolverine, you know, it's mildly humorous that he has to convince them that he's from the future and that you have to help me,
mm-hmm.
and that they don't believe him and that they're also resistant emotionally to the two of them.
Yeah.
Because they know it involves Mystique and that it brings up a lot of pain for Hank as well.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird that in this movie they really play up Professor X's relationship with Mystique and how destroyed he is that Mystique left him.
Because
mm-hmm. it seemed like in the X-Men First Class he was treating Mystique like a piece of garbage they didn't care about.
Well.
And also in the previous X-Men movies, there is no connection between Professor X and Mystique whatsoever.
Yeah, that's the weirdest part.
So the fact that, like, now in this movie...
They established, like, their childhood friendship and everything.
Right.
And,
like, but in this one, they, like, he's really upset over Mystique going to the dark side and leaving him.
Yeah.
Like, he gets into such an overly emotional fight with Magneto later over it.
Right.
And it just doesn't ring true to, like, what we've seen. Mm. But again, this movie's all about, like...
reconciling all those,
like, dumb stuff that never made sense.
Yeah.
So, and then what else happens in this movie? Professor X is a heroin hippie. That's what I wrote down here. So then they have to break Magneto out of prison because the older versions of the characters insisted that it had to be so. So,
well, I think the idea was that, like, they thought that both, like, Eric and Charles would be necessary to convince Mystique
emotionally that she needs to go back to the good
side. Because, like, Charles, I mean, they, like, talk about it and they have a point how Charles was always, like, trying to control her, you know, and so she had to, like, rebel against him, and when she did, you know, as we saw, like, she takes up with Magneto, and, like, it makes sense to me, I guess, that, like, they would both be...
I mean, that sort of makes sense, like, that they need to, like, come at her honestly together, you know, say that we've reconciled so that you can reconcile yourself.
Right.
That does make sense thematically. What doesn't make sense is, objectively, is that if Professor X just stopped taking his brain nullifying juice, mm-hmm. he could just mind control Mystique and, you know, problem solve.
Yeah, totally.
Like, or, I don't know, like, he himself is charming enough where he could maybe just appeal to her himself and do what needs to be done. He would have saved himself. He doesn't realize it as a character, I guess, but he would have saved himself a lot of trouble if he just brainwashed Mystique.
He doesn't even need to brainwash Mystique. He just needs to brainwash, like, a bunch of humans, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean?
Trask and, like...
Oh, yeah. You're right. There you go. That's a good idea. He could, like, shortcut this movie in so many different ways. He could brainwash the president, you know?
Exactly.
He could brainwash Magneto if he wanted to. Like, there's just... And it's like... It's the classic Professor X problem we bring up a million times. They have to limit his powers because otherwise he is essentially God and, you know, there's nothing to stop him. The only thing, but I don't know, to me it's like he could still have his powers and self-limit himself if they played up his morality more of like, I don't want to use my power to brainwash people. That's not the way.
Yeah.
I'm just like born with these abilities and they're amazingly powerful, but I understand that we need to live in a world of mutant-human harmony. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to use my powers to attack and manipulate humans in that way because it's like the same thing as using a gun against somebody. And I think, you know, we shouldn't use guns against people.
Yeah.
So therefore, this is why I'm extremely hesitant to use my powers specifically because I'm the most powerful mutant. Like, if there, that's one conversation that I just laid out in 10 seconds that if they just had that in several of the movies, like, it really reminds people, then
that's too much of a liberal gun control agenda for like a mainstream
movie. He doesn't have to compare it to gun control, but he could just say it for himself. He's like, I don't think like mutants should be using their powers for violence.
Yeah,
people happen to be born with these abilities.
Yeah,
like Storm's born with the ability to create a hurricane or shoot lightning at people. She doesn't want to,
right?
For she just has them. Like, why should we oppress a person like Storm? She's just a free individual in society. She can't control it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm creating a school where people with mutant abilities can learn to control these powers so that they're not destroying the world. That's his entire premise,
right?
And they just like don't make enough of that. Like, his overall
point, that's like a really big deal in the comics,
and
in the cartoon.
He shouldn't,
that he's always proselytizing like this peace message,
He shouldn't have to like be without his powers for him to get this message across.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, he should be so stubborn to use his powers. It should be like, there should be scenes in movies where Wolverine's grabbing him by the lapels. And it's like, Professor X, just brainwash this guy brainwash Magneto into stopping, like, whatever he's doing.
Yeah.
He's like, I can't, Wolverine. That goes against everything I believe in. Like, that would have been interesting. Like, you could play around with that, you know?
Right.
So, okay. So, I mean, that it is what it is.
Well, maybe not Magneto, because he gets the helmet, but...
Yeah, but the...
Point taken.
The helmet is not supposed to block Professor X's powers to begin with. That's not in the comics. At least not in the classic comics, you know? Whatever. So Magneto's buried 100 feet beneath the Pentagon. They explain that it was a prison was built there during World War II because they didn't have metal. So they built a concrete prison. So that explains that. Wolverine recruits his old pal, Quicksilver, played by Evan Peters, as we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He is in a small star-making turn here.
Yeah. He's great in this.
He's really great. He's an excellent actor. He's got genuine charm and humor.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a fun, like, anachronism as a character in the sense that Quicksilver's featured both in the Disney MCU and in the Fox X-Men universe.
Mm-hmm.
They had that other actor from Kick-Ass playing him in Disney, and they just kill him off in Avengers 2.
Mm.
Introduce him, kill him off, which is kind of a waste. But here, he's, like, is a better character overall. He's more American than he should be, I guess. His name is Peter instead of Pietro.
Mm-hmm.
And they do hint that he's the son of Magneto, and that comes up in later movies.
Mm.
It's more fun. It's like, weirdly, he's more Eastern European in the Marvel version, which makes more sense.
Yeah.
And he's got Scarlet Witch, Wanda.
Right.
Wanda's hinted at in this movie, but never seen.
Unless, is she the little girl?
No, I actually read online, they say that he's got two sisters in this movie, a little sister that we see, and then an older sister upstairs.
Oh, that the mom talks about.
Right, and that's only mentioned in the Rogue cut, I think.
Mm.
I could be wrong there. But anyway, Evan Peters is great as Quicksilver, looks great.
We've had extensive conversations about the nature of his powers, whether he's slowing down time or he just moves really quickly.
We don't know.
Go back and listen to some X-Men tests.
Yeah, we talk about it. Like, we get into a big fight about Quicksilver's powers. Why did he come up previously? Were we talking about him in some...
Yeah,
I don't
know. I should have probably looked up the name.
Yeah, that's okay. Super fans will remember the debate. Essentially, like, the debate boiled down to, and we won't get into a fight like we did last time, like, is he himself slowing down time, or is he just speeding up so fast that he can, like, appear to be doing nothing while time is, like, appreciably
moving
slowing down
at its normal rate?
Right, yeah. It doesn't quite...
The latter is what I think, and the former is what you were arguing for. But I like that they give him that same power here, but also the way he talks is really funny, because it's like he knows he has to talk slowly compared to his own, like... speedy tendencies.
Right.
But he'll, like, repeat himself because he's impatient because everyone takes so long for him.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Yeah. I wonder if his life is... the character, I think, hinted at in interviews. He said something that his character always feels like he's waiting behind somebody at the ATM.
Yeah.
Forever. And, like, that's actually pretty torturous if that's what his experience is, that right. Everyone else is so slow compared to him. But I guess he has control over his powers because he can move at a normal pace. So I guess maybe it's just more mentally that he gets frustrated at times.
Yeah.
But he's pretty funny here. He breaks Magneto out of prison. It's an impressive sequence. He has some funny lines with Magneto, like hinting that he may be his father. He's like, you know, my mother hooked up with a guy like you. I don't know, something like that. Like,
who was able to do that.
Able to control metal.
Whatever, yeah.
And Michael Fassbender is pretty funny in these moments, like, looking at him strangely. Yeah. Weirdly, the reason Quicksilver has silver hair, I think, is because Magneto's supposed to have white hair.
Right.
And yet Magneto in these movies never has white hair except as Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
So that's another thing they should have had Michael Fassbender have white hair.
Whatever. You know?
He could have gone gray between the first movie and this movie. That would have made sense, at least to me. You know, yeah. 10 years have passed.
Right.
He has silver hair now. He went, you know, I have grayer hair than a normal person my age. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It happens to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So there's a funny line, too, here where Quicksilver asks Magneto, do you know karate?
It's one of those lines, though, where it's like he can't wait for Magneto to give him the answer. It's just like... He, like, asks it, like, three times over in a few different ways, you know? Like,
yeah.
It's really funny.
Magneto's like, no, I don't know karate. That weird accent he has. But I think that's almost a relevant question to ask a lot of these mutant characters. Like, because if you read in the comics, Cyclops knows karate to an insane level. Like, if you read the Wikipedia power section of Cyclops, it says, in addition to his optic blast, he's also, like a 10-star black belt jujitsu master who could defeat 20 enemies blindfolded. You're like, really? I mean, I guess he is. He's a badass. You know? And, like, all the characters are amazing at karate. Wolverine is incredible at karate, you know. And Magneto, as we see in the cartoons and comics, like,
he does actually know karate.
Well, no, I don't know about that, but he's insanely buff. He's, like, completely muscular. So he must be good at fighting hand-to-hand. So that was a funny moment. And then we get the famous Quicksilver sequence where he slows down time and saves them all from the guards in the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Like, and everyone knows what it looks like. It looks cool. And they use it to even greater effect in the next movie. In X-Men Apocalypse, which I think is also another, like, really nice sequence. Might be a bit overkill in that movie. We'll get to it when we talk about that movie. And then, so, Magneto's rescued, and then Quicksilver fucks off from the movie.
Yeah, that's weird.
He might be really useful going forward with whatever plans they need to have.
He's like, all right, guys, see you later. I'll park your car for you. Don't worry.
Right. It was really important that he returns the Rolls-Royce that Professor X drove up in. They really could have used him. Like, I'm in the scene where they have to, like, save Mystique from the assassination.
Mm.
He could have just grabbed her real quick, like, and then ran to some other part of France.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, you're here now. You can't cause any trouble.
Right.
He could have been useful in the final fight in the White House, too, innumerably.
Yeah.
Rescuing the president or, like, doing God knows what, you know, stopping Magneto. Like, he's...
Would have been too easy.
Yeah, right. So it makes sense that Quicksilver is out of the film. So, the X-Men, they reunite on Professor X's cool private plane. Magneto and Professor X have an intense acting, like, a British actor fight, which is cool. It's a great scene. Like, it reminds you that why you really like these guys in these roles. Professor X is still pissed at Magneto about Mystique and all those stuff. Professor X Magneto lets Professor X know about some history we haven't seen. Like, why isn't Emma Frost and Banshee in this movie? Well, they all died. Including Azazel, and who else? Angel died as well.
Mm.
And I guess Riptide, too, who we don't see. It was a scene we went over earlier when Mystique breaks into Trask technology building as Trask. She cries when she sees Azazel.
Mm.
And I think that's a reference to the fact that she had sex with him because Nightcrawler's her son.
Right.
So a lot of the characters have died from the last movie. If you go on IMDb, as I did, you read a lot about Matthew Vaughn, who's the director of X-Men First Class, his plans for the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't going to be anything with the future cast or the the Ian McKellen cast. Mm-hmm. It was just going to be a movie set in the 70s where you would have January Jones as Emma Frost and all these other characters in it. Mm-hmm. And it was just more about, like, it was going to be about the Sentinels again. It was, like, there's a lot of similar elements, but it was going to be a lot about, like, telling what happened in the 60s. Mm. Which is, like, only hinted at here in conversation. For instance, yeah. The reason McNeil is in prison is because the government believed he was the cause behind the JFK assassination.
Right.
And Professor X is like, I saw the bullet curve. You know, I was there. He's like, I was trying to save the president. He was a mutant, too. And Professor X thinks he's lying to him. Of course, he can't read his mind at this moment, so he doesn't know what the truth is. I remember there being some conversation whether or not that was tasteless, that they implied that JFK was a mutant.
Right.
I remember reading some article saying that someone, maybe even the Kennedy family, was annoyed about that. Huh. I don't know. IMDb trivia says Simon Kernberg, one of the writers and the future director of X-Men Dark Phoenix, said that JFK's mutant power was hypnotic charm, which again is like pretty stupid.
I don't know.
Right, yeah. And, you know, like, there's – you can read more about the backstory about what, like, supposedly happened in the 10 years.
Yeah, they do give one little hint of Emma Frost with one of the Sentinels towards the end turns into Diamond.
Right, yeah.
So, like,
they've stolen
– yeah, they've killed her because that's how they got her mutant power.
They've stolen DNA and injected them into the Sentinels somehow. And so,
No. That's the thing with the Rogue cut.
I know. Well, the Sentinel – but I'm saying in general, the Sentinel program is taking mutant DNA – and, like, using their powers experimentally with their robots. What are you saying?
I'm saying in the Rogue cut, it's that they've used Rogue's DNA so that any mutant that the Sentinels kill, you know, that they have physical contact with, they absorb that power.
But it's not, but Rogue wouldn't have been alive when Emma Frost was alive in this timeline. So that's So they were already doing stuff like this with or without Rogue.
Mm.
Rogue's useful to them in the future to keep doing that.
Mm.
But so it's like, I think the advantage Rogue has is that they don't have to capture the mutants and, like, steal their DNA.
Yeah.
Just have Rogue and they can use her thing with the Sentinels. Like, they do it on the spot.
Right.
Basically, is which what we see.
Yeah. All right. Oh, okay, yeah.
Right. I didn't realize that. So, you know, meanwhile, Mystique is up to her own business. She's in Paris. She's trying to... She wants to kill Trask. That's her whole mission. This is an allusion to the Days of Future Past comic and even in the cartoons, too. There's an assassination that's going to ruin the future. And Mystique is, like, sort of at the heart of it, which was the case in the cartoon as well, where she pretended to be Gambit and kill Senator Kelly. Mm. Here she's trying to kill Trask. She seduces a Vietnamese general in Paris. And she assumes his identity, kills him, I guess. There's a dumb scene that I didn't like where she's, like, sexy Jennifer Lawrence seducing him at first. Then she turns into her blue self, and the guy's really stunned.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what's the matter, baby? I don't look pretty to you now. And then snaps his neck.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
With her foot.
Right. I don't like that character note of Mystique.
It's an allusion back to the previous movie where she, like, has that conversation with Hank about, like,
she's,
the nature of
She's really uptight about her beauty, right? Yeah. Her appearance. And it's, like, too much of a sore note for her.
Yeah.
That
conversation comes back again, too, like, later on with Hank, I mean.
There's just something not striking an honest note to me about that being a big problem for her. You know? She, of like, there's lots of people in the world who think they're not attractive or who are ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And they wish they could make themselves look prettier.
Mm-hmm.
She has the power to do that. Unless it causes her great pain to transform into another person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what she's complaining about. She's got the wish fulfillment fantasy to appear however she likes.
Yeah, but her point is that's not her true self. So it's like wanting to be liked for who you are, you know?
I know. But, like, I just feel that the psychological damage she feels about feeling that she's ugly in her base self is not the same as someone who is stuck appearing that way all the time.
I think it's stupid because fine, she's blue, but she's still Jennifer Lawrence. So, like, she's still attractive when she's blue.
You know, that's the question I raised to you as we were watching it. Like, how many guys would truly be repulsed by her in her blue form?
Right.
Because, like, I guess it is, like, shocking. She looks like an alien, right? She's got weird skin, not, like, human skin. But she's nude. Her body is beautiful.
Which, again, doesn't make sense. She needs the white dress with the skulls.
Right, yeah, why would she be a nudist? Okay, you're right. I agree with that. You're right, and she looks like Jennifer Lawrence. She still has, like, beautiful, symmetrical face structure.
You know, and, like, right, I mean, that's, like, the deeper thing to it, I think. Plus, I mean, there's also tons, like, of, like, very attractive people who have, like, low confidence because they've been told things or made to believe things. Or
a lot of people who grow up ugly and then become, they're like ugly ducklings that become beautiful swans.
Or not. They have low self-esteem because of whatever, you know, like things they were told. I think that's more of like the psychological allegory for her.
We just saw American Psycho. There's a lot of that going on with the Patrick Bateman character.
Right.
He's like a perfect human being, but he still like has a low self like perception of his appearance. What else is going on here? So she, you know, she's underway trying to kill Trask. So Trask, like, who's been rejected by the U.S. government, takes his technology to the communist side of the world, and he wants to sell it all, his advanced military technology, to the Russians, the Chinese, and the Vietnamese. And in the meeting, he's got a mutant detector in his pocket, and he detects that Mystique is in the room. There's a scuffle. She's about to kill him. The X-Men burst into the room, and they stop her. And, like, there's a whole kerfuffle here because Wolverine sees Colonel Stryker, and that causes him to flip out because that makes him remember the adamantium, like, thing, which is a big emotional thing in his head. So as he does this, like, in the future world, he slices Kitty Pryde and causes her to bleed because he's freaking out. So that's a problem for her. So she's losing blood. So that's why they have to get Rogue.
That is a problem for her.
Right, yeah. They have to get Rogue to replace her. That's a whole complicated subplot. But the point is, like, Magneto decides, like, he's, like, all of a sudden so convinced that Wolverine's right, which he had a lot of doubts with earlier, that he's like, all right, Mystique, I got to kill you now, my once friend and lover.
Yeah.
I'm going to just kill you. And so she has to fight with Magneto. She jumps out the window. Magneto curves a bullet to follow her and shoots her in the leg. Beast then fights with Magneto. This is a cool sequence because it's all captured on, like, 1970s newsreel footage.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks kind of cool in a way.
Yeah. It's a nice, like, sunny orangey colored video.
It's like a way of, like, showing special effects and, like, a surreal, like, old type of camera.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like that scene. But I don't like the... I don't like Magneto's change of, like split second, like, I'm going to, like, kill you, Mystique, now. It's for the better benefit of the future.
Because
it's almost like, this is, like, his first super villain plan. Like, I have to be a villain, you know? Like, here's, I'm not a good guy. Here's my villainry. I'm just going to kill someone close to me. And then when that fails, they make a note of him capturing the Sentinel plans from Trask and flying off on his own direction. And he's like, all right, I have to come up with a better, more super villainry plan after this. So I just don't like his, like, too quick, like, changes of heart. It just seems kind of, like, rushed in a way. You know, like, Magneto always has to go from being sort of good to very bad in all these movies, you know?
Yeah.
He's an ally of the X-Men until he isn't. He can never be trusted. It's like, how many times can you fool the X-Men, you know?
Yeah.
And it happens in the next movie. It's even more ridiculous. And the coup de grace, the ridiculous of all these things, is that Professor X always lets Magneto go.
Yeah.
It's dumb.
All right, old friend.
Yeah. It's like, I'll fly away now. Yeah. I'm super dangerous. You can never trust me, but we're old friends, so you gotta let me go. And Professor X is like, yeah, I guess you're right. I shouldn't arrest you or anything.
Right. Except in the continuity of these movies, they're not that old friends. And
right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, none of it rings, like, exactly true. I guess... we should talk about the Rogue cut a bit. So, Kitty is hurt. So the X-Men in the future form a little strike force of Magneto, Iceman, and someone else, too. Is it Wolverine? No. Professor X. It's Professor X, Magneto, and Iceman go to the X-Mansion, which is taken over by Sentinels. Rogue is being captured in the Cerebro basement. They rescue Rogue somehow. Iceman dies in this attempt. He's, like, killed, like, three times in this movie.
Yeah.
They rescue Rogue, and they fly her back to China, like, all in 10 minutes somehow. I don't know how that's done. The time doesn't make sense. This is why...
I'm not sure why they have to be in China. The point is just that they're in, like, different locations all the time,
yeah,
right?
It's just... It made sense that they cut this from the movie, because none of it, like, matters.
It's also weird, because, the exterior of that hideout is like Chinese mountains, I guess,
right.
Like those tall limestone mountains, but then the interior is like, in real life, it's that palace, that famous palace with all the colored windows, that's actually in India.
Oh, really?
It's like a weird cut together. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, whatever.
So they rescue Rogue. She takes over for Kitty, at least in this version. They show scientists scraping up Mystique's blood after Magneto shot her. So it was actually all Magneto's fault for trying to shoot Mystique. Mm-hmm. That the future's all fucked up because they got Mystique's DNA one way or the other. And then there's a good scene where Professor X is kind of like, doesn't know what to do next, and Wolverine convinces him to talk to himself from the future. So at this point, Professor X has agreed to allow his powers to return. And there's a great scene where McAvoy talks to Patrick Stewart. And it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I think this is like, makes like this movie good, is stuff like this, mm-hmm. where McAvoy and Stewart really show off their acting chops. McAvoy reads Hugh Jackman's mind, and he's like, "You poor, poor man." You know, yeah. He sees all the horrible shit that's gone on in his life, uh-huh. and you really get a sense of the humanity of both characters. You know, like to me, that's what Professor X is all about. He is like the ultimate empath. Mm-hmm. He really feels everybody's pain. The ultimate Bill Clinton. You know? and then he connects with Patrick Stewart in the future, and it's just a great scene where they have great dialogue, where they talk about a lot of the stuff that Professor X should be talking about more in the movies, about hope and optimism in the future.
Yeah.
He's like, listen, young self, you have to really believe in yourself.
Right.
And it's like, that's like, you can't imagine what thoughts they're exchanging too. The Professor X, Patrick Stewart really lets younger Professor X, who's lost and without hope, he like lets him in the richness of what is possible of your life to come, where you're going to train all these humans, you're going to make such a difference, you're going to save the world. It's like a beautiful moment.
Again, I don't really understand the mechanics of the time travel stuff that's at work here. But
right, yeah, it should be a paradox. Like, their brains should both explode.
Right,
by,
but it's suspension of disbelief, it's fine, because the scene comes out cool.
Yeah, like, if it's the Doc Brown rules, where you're not allowed to, like, interact with your future past self, like, there should be a paradox that destroys the galaxy.
Right.
But here, you're right, so much, and that...
It's like that scene that, like, Hank goes into... Hugh Jackman's room and is like, listen, I know there's probably like all these rules because of time travel where you're not allowed to tell me what happens because it could mess up the future or whatever, but like, am I gonna live?
Yeah.
And like, he just looks at him, he's like, no.
Yeah. Hugh Jackman does not care about trampling over the past and preserving
anything.
Even
though he got warned, it's not sticking with him.
And then, like, I can't really undersell James McAvoy's performance is great, just the way he's crying and he's like, so much pain. And the older Professor X has to teach him that, like, you have to allow the pain in, you know, because it'll help you in the end or something. So, and then, you know, so now James McAvoy's finally on board. He knows what to do. He's a superhero again. He tries to stop Mystique at the airport, who's going to fly to Washington, I guess, to kill either Trask or the president. I'm not sure who she's trying to kill at this point. But it's a nice scene, too. It's pretty cool. Pretty lavish, like 1970s airport costuming and stuff. I like that scene. Magneto's off by himself too. He's like, figures out where the Sentinels are. They're on a train being transported to Washington. Nixon has agreed with Trask to start the Sentinel program based on what happened at the Paris Peace Conference. So, but Magneto gets there first. He infuses the Sentinels with the train tracks, with metal, so he can control them. Somehow that allows. With metal being in them, it allows him to control their computer programming.
Yeah.
Which makes no sense, and respond to his voice commands. It's more nonsense. Speaking of nonsense, like, there's a White House ceremony where Professor X, Beast, and Wolverine are going to stop Mystique. Magneto is there as well. He's got his costume. He breaks into the Pentagon to steal his costume. We see Havoc's destroyed uniform there as well, and the Nazi gold coin. For some reason, that's a museum piece at the Pentagon, along with Magneto's helmet. Magneto lands in RFK Stadium, which is where the Washington Senators used to play, and also then I guess the Washington Nationals, the current baseball team, before they moved to their new ballpark. But he lifts it up like an enormous ring of a stadium, and he flies it to the White House. Supposedly one of the children we see looking up at this in Washington is Jean Grey. I read that in IMDb trivia. I don't know if it's true or not. And it's a pretty cool sequence, I think. Looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty badass. It doesn't make sense. It feels like that whole thing would just crumble around him, you know, instead of
held together with like steel, probably, right?
Yeah, I guess you're right. But it is dripping as it's like he's flying it over the horizon.
I buy it.
Right, and he drops it over the White House, creating like an impenetrable wall, which is like a really cool idea.
Yeah,
Magneto's powers are way off the chain in this movie, which I like. He still doesn't have the Magneto bubble that we see in the cartoons and comics. You know, the like the electric sphere that he surrounds himself in that allows him to fly.
Yeah.
I mean, here he could just fly by himself.
You want to see the bubble?
The bubble would have been useful for him because Future Magneto gets, like, when he's defending the Chinese-Indian base from Sentinels, he gets struck by flying debris.
I know. How could that happen? It was a piece of metal, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know. It was a piece of a Sentinel who supposedly don't have metal.
Oh, it was.
So okay. Maybe it's... Some but the point is, like, if he had his protective shield, he would have been fine.
Yeah.
I would have liked to... I'd like to see that in a future movie in the new incarnation of Magneto. Mm-hmm. Give me the shiny electric bubble. Yeah, I like the way that looks.
Cool.
So, so there's a big fight. Magneto controls the Sentinels, turns them on the friendly crowd. Nixon retreats into the White House, into a like steel underground fortress beneath the White House. Professor X is like trapped by the steel beams. We finally see Wolverine take on a Sentinel, which I've always wanted to see in these movies, but he's got the bone claws, so immediately when he stabs one, they get stuck in the guy's arm, the Sentinel's arm, and he's useless. But however, there's a cool scene where Beast attacks the Sentinel and rips out its neck cables with his teeth, which I think is a famous image from many comics. Mm-hmm. It might have happened, I don't think it happened in the cartoons, but definitely in the comics we see Beast rip out Sentinel's like innards with his teeth and stuff, and so that was cool at least. Another great scene of Magneto where he rips out the little steel box, the safe panic room that the president is in, rips it out from the ground and from the front of the White House. All looks great. Mm-hmm. And rips open the door. Like, he can't be stopped at this point. Pulls out all their guns. They're flowing in the air. Again, looks corny to me when he does that.
Yeah.
It looks too much like a Hanna-Barbera cartoon, like floating revolvers.
Right. Know. It makes sense that he would take all the guns out of the room so that he's not in danger, but... Yeah.
All the news cameras are still turned on somehow, and he points them at him and starts giving a speech about how warning mankind that mutant kind has so much power. Just look at what I've done. It's only like a fraction of what we're capable of. Mm. It's a pretty menacing speech and pretty fucked up. And I guess he's about to kill the president and take over. I don't know what he's going to do, like destabilize the United States government. I'm not quite sure what his plot is here, like in the end. Either. But he's just warning mankind, and it's...
Just doesn't seem like that would be an effective measure to take, because you're going to create widespread panic, and...
Like, what's he going to do? Like, he's going to have to kill everyone in Congress, I guess, to, you know... But it also seems like it's really making the future going to be way worse than it is, than what it's already set up, because what he's showing the world... Like, imagine that broadcast in 1973.
Yeah, really.
It's like
a War of the Worlds scenario.
Yeah, totally. It's completely terrifying. And then Mystique is there, too, like, about to kill the president. She shoots Magneto in the neck, and she wants to take control of the situation herself.
Yeah.
And Professor X has to convince Mystique not to do it. And in doing so, the future is preserved. Again, I don't... buy it enough that Mystique just deciding not to kill the president is enough to save the world from mutants.
Yeah.
It just seems like all the stuff that had happened...
There's still going to be, like, strict...
There's still going to be, like, riots in the streets and chaos and stuff.
People
somebody dropped a stadium on the White House.
In some way.
Yeah, exactly. They say in the newspapers we see in the next day that White House attacked, but mutants saved the president. So it's like the newspapers
spin
it.
I just doubt if that would be the spin.
Yeah, it
would
have been like
real life.
Chaos in Washington, like crazy mutants attack president, like other crazy shit happens.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, what the fuck's happening? People can lift stadiums and shapeshift and crazy things. The world is like changed.
Yeah.
So, right, it just seems weird that the world would read it so clear-headedly. I mean, I guess because all the cameras are turned on and indisputably people see the drama unfold.
Right.
So they're like, well, I guess, you know, she's a good person, Mystique, because they see her make a conscious choice and that kind of crazy stuff. So, in the midst, Magneto, like, before he gets taken down, he infuses Wolverine's bones with some metal debris really graphically and flings them off into the... Washington pool into
the Potomac.
Yeah, well, no, not the Potomac. The what's that? Is it the Potomac? Yeah. I thought like he got thrown into the reflection pool by the Washington Monument.
Oh, was that it?
I don't know. I'm not remembering.
Some water anyway.
Yeah, so he's drowning perpetually. In the future, the Sentinels are closing in on the future mutants. They're killing off Storm, Bishop, Iceman, Colossus. Oh, not Iceman this time. Colossus, Sunspot. They're all dead. Magneto.
Oh, yeah, Bishop. I wish Bishop had a big
part. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about
this.
Bishop, yeah.
Yeah. He, like, I don't know. I like the actor they cast. Mm-hmm. I thought he was good. and they, like, let Bishop do some time traveling. They, like, give him his gun and some powers and stuff, but it's just not, like, a well-developed part.
It's not enough, right? He's just too much of a side character thrown in for no reason just to say, hey, there's Bishop.
Also, he's African now.
Right, as opposed to in the comics where... I think he's like, I just read this online. In the comics, he's supposed to be Australian Aboriginal descent. He still might be American, though.
Yeah.
Like an American guy, that's his background.
Right.
I always read him as American. To me, the definitive...
In the comics, he has like an not comics, in the...
Cartoon he does.
Cartoon has an American accent.
To me, the cartoon is the definitive version of Bishop that I'll always love. Yeah. The cartoon. He's such a fun character. He's over the top and steroided out. He's like your classic, like Arnold Schwarzenegger type. You know, muscly man who is just crazy.
Yeah.
So that's the Bishop that always rule in my brain. This Bishop, he's just a side character and not given much to do. When he absorbs other mutant energy, like Storm fills him up with electricity, he channels it into his gun,
right?
Which I didn't like. Just give him a future gun and then let him shoot lasers out of his hands. That's what his power is. Exactly. Why combine it?
Yeah. Anyway, it was good to see him. I wish we saw more of him.
It looked pretty accurate. Yeah. The actor looked like cool enough. He's got the M mark on his eyeball because he was marked. Yeah, wish we saw more of him. Wish he was used more. So the day is saved. Professor X lets Magneto go for God knows why. Flies off. Meanwhile, it's the future now. So the future is saved. So Wolverine wakes up in 2023. The X Mansion is preserved. He sees all his old pals from the original movies. We see Rogue with Iceman. They're together again, even though... X-Men 3 in this movie less to believe that Iceman fell in love with Kitty, but I guess like in this new timeline Rogue was able to reclaim Bobby. We see Kitty with Colossus teaching a class, and they're supposed to be together based in the comics, their partnership. And then we see surprise surprise, Famke Janssen's back again as Jean Grey, looking good in a dark red dress. Always love to see her in monochrome colors.
Super red hair.
Yeah. She looks really... She plays it just right. Because you can tell that she's almost reading Wolverine's mind, like something really bizarre has happened to him. But then she kind of just lets it go and walks away. Oh, and then, of course, James Marsden's back as Cyclops, thank God.
Yeah.
They revived him. Correcting,
just for a little cameo.
Right, yeah. Correcting a terrible injustice when they killed off his character. Hmm. So Cyclops is alive and well. And he's got a funny little moment. An IMDb trivia again notes that, like, Wolverine, you can almost see him lifting his middle finger as he sees him instinctually. And so he's alive. He goes off with Jean. Good for them. And Professor X is wearing a nice green suit, sort of reminiscent of the cartoon, at least. Mm-hmm. And he recognizes that Wolverine is finally back from the events that he knows him from. And I guess he has to fill him in now in the past 50 years.
Yeah,
he's like, well, you've lived this whole other life that you'll never know now. It's like your brain just got wiped over one single night. That's kind of a shame for him in a weird way, but whatever.
But also...
It's a price he had to pay.
If it's going to happen to anyone, Wolverine's lived for a very long time.
He's had multiple timelines, yeah. So everything's well. Meanwhile, back in the past, we see what happened to the 1973 Wolverine. He's been dredged up by the military. And this is a scene that makes no fucking sense. I have no idea what's going on or what justifies it. But Colonel Stryker, Major Stryker, lifts him. He's like, oh, I have plans for him. And which makes sense. Like, oh, now Wolverine's going to get his adamantium skeleton.
Yeah, you're like, oh, good, set up.
Right, yeah, the continuity makes sense. But then it's revealed that Major Stryker is Mystique.
That does not make sense.
Yeah, so Mystique would not give him to the government. She would probably let him go.
Yeah. She probably wouldn't go looking for him in the first place. What does she care?
Yeah, I don't understand that she had much of a connection to Logan in this movie. Mm. Not really. So I don't know what's going on there. And then there's a mid-credit sequence where Peter Dinklage is the one in the Magneto Pentagon prison.
Right. I don't know, because he stole... Or he sold government secrets about the Sentinel program?
I guess that and the Sentinel program was such a disaster.
But why does he need to be in maximum security metal-free prison?
Yeah,
put him in regular jail.
Yeah, he needs to just be in regular jail.
Anyway.
Yeah, there's nothing inherently dangerous about him that he needs to be locked away in solitary confinement like that. And then the final end credit sequence sets up the next movie, X-Men Apocalypse. We see an actor, not Oscar Isaac, using telekinesis, which I don't think is an Apocalypse power, to assemble a pyramid all by himself while thousands of people are praying to him.
Right.
And Sabor, Nabal, whatever his name is. And you see the four horsemen in the distance. Right? Yeah. And the movie ends. Woo!
Woo!
All right. So I hope you enjoyed our retelling of X-Men Days of Future Past. The highs, the lows, the in-betweens, the creamy middles, as Homer Simpson likes to say.
And Willie Simpson.
All right. And Willie Simpson. I don't know, Sonia, what do you think of this movie?
Good movie.
Really? Like, I think it's good. It's
5 out of 6 Wolverine claws.
All right. So... of the four,
4 out of 6.
Of the four Bryan Singer movies, he did X-Men 1 and 2, and uh-huh. he did Days of Future Past and X-Men Apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
Where does this rank for you?
In terms of, like, viewing experience the first time around,
yeah.
I think...
In terms of any experience you want to
compare
to. I think
they're probably in that order. Nothing compares to, like, the freshness of, like, the first
yeah.
run of X-Men movies and how excited...
Yeah.
Everyone was about that. I don't know. Like I said, this is like solid sci-fi territory with the time travel thing. You get a lot of good X-Men appearances.
A lot of good fan service. Oh. Fan service done well compared to X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yeah, there's like a couple corny fan service moments, right. but like they're not as heavy-handed as in a lot of the other ones. Really solid acting from the whole cast, I would say.
Good production value.
Yeah, it looks great.
I think it's better. You know, this might be a controversial opinion. I think it's better than X-Men 2. X-Men 1 is forever my favorite Bryan Singer movie mm-hmm. of the X-Men's. This might, upon rewatching this now, it's just, it's more, it's fresher maybe than X-Men 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more satisfying. It's more epic in scale. And it's got a lot of good acting.
Yeah.
I think this is the second favorite of the Bryan Singer ones for mm-hmm. me.
X2 is third, Apocalypse is fourth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do...
I would agree with that ranking, probably. In terms of, like, raw excitement upon first seeing the movie, it probably would go in chronological
right,
order.
Right, absolutely. X-Men 2 lived for a long time as the best X-Men movie. For me, it's a controversial opinion in and of itself that X-Men 1's the best one.
Yeah.
But I can't...
Because when you look back on it, you're like, well, yeah.
Right.
Problems.
But I love X-Men 1, yeah. and I always will. I'll always remember the feelings I felt watching it. So that's why, to me, it's always going to be the best X-Men movie to this date. why is that funny, too?
Yeah, I don't know. All the feelings
yeah.
of the X-Men.
this one, when I first saw it, I really was happy at the end when all the characters came back to life from X-Men 1. I was really pleased. So,
yeah.
Oh, Kelsey Grammer's Beast made a brief appearance.
Right, just for a minute at the end, yeah. I still like that. I still like, you know, seeing the whole cast like that, the old and...
And I gotta say, the Apocalypse Stinger got me a little excited. I was like, all right, let's see what they do with Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Turns out they didn't do that great.
No, that was kind of let down. We'll get there.
Yeah, you know, I'll say about Apocalypse, X-Men Apocalypse, I do have a soft spot for it. I know people hate it, and I actually kind of don't like it either. Like, when we talk about it, I'm sure I'll pick apart every minute of it.
I feel like every single one of these movies is very hot and cold at the same time.
Yeah,
you know?
It is. Well, that's the fatal flaw of all the X-Men Cinematic Universe. They're just, like, missing something that... is lacking, and I think it has to do with it's missing the Marvel magic
uh-huh.
that you see in the MCU.
Yeah.
I think, and you know, I've said a million times, I think when it gets in the hands of Kevin Feige, he's gonna give us the definitive cinematic version of the X-Men.
Can't wait.
And it's not like these movies are so bad. Like, the acting has always been really good. They get A-plus actors. Yeah, so that's like something we'll have to see going forward, how they do that. But still, like, once the X-Men are integrated finally into the world of Spider-Man and the Avengers and Fantastic Four,
mm-hmm.
they're going to have their place, and it's going to be way more interesting and way more compelling. And I think we're going to get a lot more. We're going to get stuff like the Professor X gold chair and the Magneto bubble. Like, not that those are the important things at all, but just, like, there'll be details like that, maybe not specifically,
uh-huh.
that are going to make you, like, pump your fist in your audience chair. So we'll see. So X-Men Days of Future Past, I'm not sure what the next one is. I don't know if it's Deadpool. It's definitely not Logan. It's probably going to be Deadpool next, if I had to guess. And then X-Men Apocalypse, then Logan.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll continue.
So look forward.
Trudge on. Yeah. So my final, what's your Wolverine Claw rating? that's fun. Out of 6.
I think I'm going to say 4.5 out of 6.
I'm going to say 5 Wolverine Claws out of 6.
I don't even remember how many I gave the last one.
I think
I don't think
you gave 3.5 to the Wolverine.
I did?
I think you did, yeah.
I'm inconsistent.
Maybe. That's fine. It's consistent.
Anyway.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
4.5 out of 6.
Right. I'm going to say 5 out of 6. Pretty good. Before Bryan Singer tragically shot himself in the foot, both in his commercial and professional life. So that's it for that. If you like what you hear, tell your friends about it. Give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever else. Follow me on Twitter. Join our X-Men Test Facebook group. You can tell us your thoughts on the movie. If you think we're crazy, stuff we missed, stuff we should be talking about. We always love your input. And we look forward to... we still got 3 more movies to go. If you're wondering about why we didn't mention Deadpool 2, we've already talked about it previously when the movie came out. So that one will be forever out of order continuity wise. Makes sense though in the spirit of that movie because everything gets messed up there too. So 3 more X-Men movies, then we can finally move on to Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And that is all I have to say. Sonya, any final words?
How about karate? Do you know karate?
Good night, everybody.